Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, psychologist and researcher. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour, bringing together fascinating research, insights and real-life experiences. This season, we're exploring goals. We get to meet Darren Scotland, the designer and illustrator behind Ace of Place. What a fab name. Darren's creative studio celebrates homes, buildings and the stories behind them through bold and minimalist portraits. Darren has digitally drawn hundreds of homes, pubs, shops and local landmarks across the UK and beyond. His aim is always to capture the most significant details in fewer strokes as possible. When he's not drawing, you'll find him running around after his young family at home in Leeds, or literally, probably training for his next marathon. And I love this conversation so much, and Darren was so open, and his goal is so inspiring that we didn't get a chance to talk about running. And I know the first rule about being a runner is that you have to talk about running when you speak to another runner. And I will remedy that. And I've made a note to ask him next time what his running goals are for 2026. But for now, let's get into it.
It is all about celebrating places. And that obviously ties into homes more specifically. But I've drawn lots of football stadiums. I drew Leeds Town Hall, where myself and my wife, we got married. Parkinson Building in Leeds, where people graduate. So it's about celebrating these buildings, but more than buildings, the places that matter, that mean something to us, and everything in between.
I love it. Belonging and place is just a massive part of our identity and who we are.
I live in a terrace street, a classic kind of red brick terrace. There's thousands of them around here, but this one means something to me, and that's why I want to try and capture and celebrate for people.
We make sense of ourselves through the communities that we're in. So I'm exploring that through a psychological lens, and you're exploring that through that artistic lens, you see.
I find if we're going to go into a little bit of the kind of psychology behind it all, I was brought up as a kind of Air Force brat. So I was born in Swindon. I lived in Germany for 6 years. I lived in all kinds of different places. I went to about 16 different schools over my childhood. And I think I can remember being somewhat perplexed by conversations people would have when I was younger about people putting down roots. Mm-hmm. And this idea that you would be rooted to a place, because I never was. I was always, every 2 or 3 years we would move. And I get it now as a 40-something-year-old bloke with, I've got an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old. We bought this house before either of them were born. You know, our whole lives are kind of baked in and around this sort of, well, it's like a 10-mile radius of our house, really. And yeah, it's taken all that time to kind of understand that, I suppose.
I could talk to you all day about houses and geography, because that's just, you know, that is infinitely interesting. But what I'm really interested in is, what goal or resolution do you have, and where's that come from?
Well, I think if I'm going to get super kind of business focused here, so at the moment I'm just about kind of scraping by in terms of what I'm doing, but I've got quite big ambitions. I want to grow Ace of Place into something bigger than just me. I like the idea of bringing in additional artists or additional illustrators, maybe on a kind of guest basis or even more permanently. I think my vision for Ace of Place in the future is that we can become sort of known as the place to go for, you know, a portrait of your home or whatever. And that you could land on the Ace of Place website and you might be able to choose, you could pick your artist and you could look at different kind of styles and go from there. I think there's a few challenges. Obviously, the world of AI is something that we're just, every post under the sun is talking about that at the moment. I don't use any AI at all in what I do. It's all drawn from scratch. I'm really proud of that. I think that's a real point of difference. But I also I can't deny there's a threat. But I think it's understanding that if people want a picture of their house and they want it as cheap as they can get it, I'm not the place to go. They're not. I'm not that person, and I've got to be okay with that, and I am okay with that. But that's the, yeah, that's the big challenge, I suppose, is where can I get to a place by this time next year where I'm in a serious position that I can look at bringing somebody else on board. And what I need to do with that, I've been working with a business coach over the last sort of few months and stuff anyway. So I've got a lot clearer on what my kind of goals and where I need to get to in terms of clients and things like that. I switched my sort of focus last year, or sort of at the start of this year really, and turned it much more into a kind of B2B rather than a B2C business.
Explain that shift and what that looks like.
So I think what I was trying to do is to appeal to kind of people like me, proud homeowners, people who have completed renovations, people just moving house, you know, you sort of kind of general population. And actually I became much more targeted, or I've tried to target estate agents and mortgage brokers and property developers and people like that. The theory being that these people, once you've commissioned me once, once you've got a picture of your house, you're not going to want another one next year or the year after or whatever. You know, it's one and done, isn't it? So estate agents are, you know, selling 20, 50, 100 houses a year. Can I find, you know, a core group of estate agents that really get what I do, love property, passionate about what they do too, and can I get them to commit to? I reckon I need to do around about 120 to 150 portraits a year would put me in a really good place. So that's about 12 a month. I'm probably doing about 6 or 7 at the moment. So I guess the big goal for me is to be consistently doing 12 portraits every month by this time next year. I've got 3 core clients, people that have come to me. One of them has done 24 portraits with me so far. Another one has done 21 with me so far. And the third one is just on number 9. But I need to get, I'd like to get at least 10 people into that category. I've just invested in a CRM system, which I never thought I would do. You know, I think it's really helped just in the sort of 6 weeks that I've been using it. I can track the relationships I've got with them. So whenever I've had a contact with them, I can put data in there. So then, and then I can diarize checking in with them again in the future. And I can categorize them into different kind of prospect types. And my ambition each day is to try and nudge people down that funnel as much as I can without sort of pushing too hard. I think that's the thing that I've learned this year is I'm a designer and I'm an illustrator, but actually that's the easy bit of the job. The big part of the job is the marketing and sales piece. That's massive. And I think I've drawn something like 400, 500 homes now. So I do still sometimes get in my head and think, oh, well, this is just nonsense. You're not any good at this, Darren. No one's buying it. No one's commissioned you this week. What are you playing at? Blah, blah, blah. All the sort of self-doubt that every single one of us goes through from time to time. You know, proof of concept is long synced. I've done this multiple times. I've had people say really wonderful things about what I've done. What the challenge is, and you know, always has been, is actually getting the eyeballs on it. How do I expose it to enough people to get me to a point where it starts to snowball?
So let's roll back. It feels like there are two prongs to your goal. One is growth, and that growth is in a new category. So you switch to B2B, where people are buying repeat products from you. But then the second prong of that growth is expansion, and that expansion is moving to presumably a consultancy model or associate model, where you've got different designers or illustrators working with your portfolio. So a question that I've got is, at what point does the activity of growth, what point does that then shift or move into that expansion?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question, really. I think what Leona, shout out to Leona, by the way, Joyful Selling, She's wonderful. She's helped me realize this level of ambition I've kind of always had. Probably the last 3 or 4 years, I've just been like, anything to survive. I don't really care about doing anything big. I just want to pay the bills kind of thing. So, where do I get to? I mean, I guess the first challenge is just get to a sustainable place first. And that is get to that consistent 12 commissions a month position, which I haven't been in yet. And I would like to be in for 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. Get to a place where I've got a kind of, you know, a waiting list and I'm booked out. And I know that I can look ahead and I can say, look, for the next 3 months, I've got this in the books. I don't need to worry about what I'm working on next week or the week after that. I know I'm already stacked up. I think when I get to that position, that's when I'll think, okay, people are coming to me and asking me to do work and I'm not able to do it. That's when I've got a different type of problem to solve. I'm not there yet.
Can I replay that to you? That sure. Be artistic in my license and how I describe it. So I would describe that as I'm going to work really, really hard. And when I can't cope, I'm going to draft in some help. You have to be at a certain capacity to expand. Is that the belief that you're holding at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, again, if I was to go back historically, I mean, I've worked for myself now for what, 18, 19 years, a long time. I have had these ideas of what I would, the bad part in my head tells me they're grandiose ideas and that kind of who do you think you are type of thing. And I think I have felt burnt by that in the past. So I'm very sort of protective of my own state of mind to an extent, I think, is to not push too far too quick. Like, don't run away with yourself here, Darren. Just deal with get your shit together right now before you start thinking about doing X, Y, and Z. Because you've got stuff to figure out in the moment, like in the short term. I've started to take things like CRM systems a lot more seriously than I ever have done in the past, because that's what's gonna help me get there. I've got big vision and grandiose ideas, but without the systems and the processes and the structure in place, and I haven't got anybody else who's going to do that for me, I've got to bite the bullet and be a grown-up about it and start doing those things myself. So that's where I am.
Oh, it's really interesting to hear you talk. I'm hopefully giving you space to just talk it out. I'm quite intrigued by your use of the word grandiose and what you've described to me as your vision. Certainly I'm not judging that as being grandiose. I'm judging it as being, wow, that sounds really exciting and doable. And everything that you're describing to me sounds that you've put your thought into it, you've done your research, you're working with the right people, you're capitalising on resources that are available to you. And I can hear you reflecting on your experience, those 16, 17 years in recruitment and running a business and saying, well, what do I do differently here and how do I do that? But the word grandiose then feels a little bit off. It feels like perhaps you don't quite believe that you deserve this. And that is, who do you think you are? And
I don't know that I've got the, I don't know that I've got it completely sussed in terms of how I overcome that. But yeah, I mean, that has always been the biggest barrier for me, is this idea that following through. I've always been someone who's had big ideas and big plans, and I can hear myself doing it now. I've always been this, I've always been that. Doesn't mean I always have to be that thing. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of having that level of self-awareness and not falling into traps that I have done in the past. And I think probably the trap that I've fallen into in the past is listening to myself say that too much and then stepping back and thinking, well, don't try, it's not going to work. What's the point? Go and do X, Y, or Z instead. So getting better at that, but still challenges to overcome for sure.
It might be useful to reflect on your previous business, but talk to me about collaboration. How does, or what would collaboration with artists look like for you?
It would be really cool to find someone with a kind of really kind of similar style or outlook to me, or was it, I like seeing cool work. I like seeing work that I look at and think, God, how do you do that? And I like it to be a bit edgy, a bit contemporary, challenging the sort of status quo. You know, I'm not out here trying to pretend I'm not Picasso, starting the sort of abstract impressionist movement or anything. I'm just drawing houses, but I try and do it in a way, or I'm trying to do it in a way that feels authentic to me. And the idea, what's always appealed to me as a designer especially, is how can I communicate something with as fewer strokes of the metaphorical brush as possible. I also think I would really love to do, from a more human point of view, is I know how bloody hard it is to get work when you're doing stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So if Ace of Place can become a platform for artists where someone can show up and like give them some work without really having to try too hard for it, and I can provide that opportunity to them, That would be super, super rewarding. Go do something wonderful with it, and then do it under my umbrella, and that's that.
And it strikes me this is an area that you're very seasoned and expert in, because you ran a recruitment business, so you understand that business model of doing the hard work, putting the time in, building those client relationships with the B2B, and then bringing in the candidates, where for them it should be a fairly seamless process, right? You're the perfect person to be thinking about that type of model.
Yeah, I think it would be really cool to find some talent out there that might be undiscovered. I used to work with some really, really high-flying people, people on multiple six-figure salaries and things. The satisfaction always came mostly from getting people on that first rung of the ladder, finding those mm-hmm. entry-level roles, and that like really changing somebody's life and opening up a new world for them. That was where the real joy was. So I've not really thought about the kind of parallels in my sort of old world and this one, but there definitely are in that respect.
So there's this idea then of that expansion looking like a curation, an aesthetic that is complementary to your brand.
Yeah.
How do you know the type of aesthetic that your existing clients would also be interested in if you were offering a portfolio?
I don't know, actually. And I think I had a little bit of a kind of epiphany a couple of weeks ago, insofar as this, particularly with the more B2B clients, the estate agents and mortgage brokers and people like that. It dawned on me that they're not really buying the art, I don't think. What I'm doing is I'm solving a problem for them. Like the issue they've got is that there's an expectation for them to leave behind some kind of completion gift, probably for their buyer, almost definitely for their seller, because they're the ones that are paying the fees. Now, stereotypically, your estate agent might give you a bottle of Prosecco or something like that, which is great. Like, you drink the Prosecco, you say thank you very much, but 6 weeks later, it's done and dusted. You forget about it, don't you? What I'm doing is I'm providing them with something that looks and is really, really thoughtful, properly unique and bespoke, with lots and lots of time and effort that's gone into creating it, that leaves a lasting legacy for them as well. So lots of the agents have, little sign-off lines on the bottom of the portraits. Sold by Tim in 20... Or Holly, who I've just done one for in Hull, has her little sold board baked into the portrait as well. Some people have their logos kind of watermarked. I've watermarked it in the edges for them. So they're literally putting a referral engine into their client's home. And put yourself in an estate agent's shoes. Imagine if, all of your clients' friends come round. Mm-hmm. That's a picture. Where do you get that? Oh, my estate agent, Tim, gave it to me when we sold our house. Bang. And off we go. So, and the agents get to do that with really limited sort of effort on their part. All they have to do is send me their listing. I draw the house. I package it up. I frame it. They give it to their seller. They're buying it because it's solving a problem for them. So in a sense, we don't know that it it would matter that much who the artist was. I think they might just go on the site and pick a flavor and say, oh, that one looks nice. Different when I'm talking to consumers, because I think they do fall in love with your style and your aesthetic a little bit more. But no, with the business market, I think it's a different framing.
Perhaps that's an action to look at different aesthetics and to float those with some of your current clients and to see how that looks. This is interesting. So I wrote down, you said, I'm just drawing houses. But then we took a breath and you went on to say, but I'm solving problems. You've given two opposites, haven't you, I suppose, of where you view this business in your head. There is the part of you that's going, I'm just drawing houses. Who do I think I am? And then you've got this bit where, you know, there's a completely obvious response, which is fulfilling a very direct need for the business you're selling it to, but it provides pleasure and belonging to the people who get the gift at the end. I would reflect with you, that's potentially some of the thought process when you're setting your goals is, can you reconcile the differences that you sit with? Does that solidify that belief of, I've got to grow before I can expand?
Just don't know how expanding, how I could, if I wanted to expand any earlier, I couldn't contemplate doing that right now because in my mind, I'm not ready to do that. Why am I not ready to do that? Well, because I'm not making enough revenue to do that. I'm creating more work for myself when I'm barely able to do the work that I've got to do already, I suppose. Yeah, there's some exploring to do there, I guess.
Let's take a further angle. One of the things that you'd said was, I like to get people a rung on the ladder. I get a sense of satisfaction from that. And that's something that you've experienced in a previous role. But then you'd also talked about giving other artists opportunity. This might be more akin to a narrative that I see with women in business, where that generosity and fairness comes before profit. Yeah. You're talking about growing the business and being able to give other people opportunity. But at the same time, there's a belief that I can't grow until I'm somewhere myself. Which one is the priority? Is it the growth for you, or is it the expansion to give other people platform?
I think the growth for me is the priority. Yeah, I can't see foot around that. I want to be more established, because then I think, not just because it gives me more financial freedom, which is something that I'm definitely striving for, I guess it then becomes an authority thing, because I think, well, that's probably the piece that's more at play here, is how can I go out and show other art or provide platforms for other artists when I haven't done it to the level I wanted for myself yet. I feel like I need to be in that position on my own before I can open the doors to other people and I can speak with more authority on it. Does that make sense?
Let's fast forward. You are at a place where you think, yeah, I've got authority. What things are in place that are giving you all that authority that you're seeking?
I think it's just going back to what we said before. It's that where I've done consistent, the levels of work consistently for however many months. I've got an order book that's bursting at the seams, is a nice word that's been provided. But, you know, I think what is liberating in business and saying no to work, being in a position to say no to work is a really, I have found that a really liberating place to be. I think, yeah, if I was literally too busy to take on more stuff, then, yeah, like I said, that's when I know. I have kind of mapped this out a little bit earlier on in the year. It's been a bit of a rollercoaster year, really. I started off with this new focus. Things took off. It was a really good summer. We went away for the whole of August. I felt like I managed that really well. I stacked work up. I got the message out months in advance. I'm going to be away in August. Don't try and reach me in August because I ain't going to be here. If you want something doing, you need to get it booked in. I didn't really look at my emails at all. It was brilliant. When I got back in September, I had a load of work stacked up. It was all great, but I didn't do any pipeline stuff. And then I did all the work and I got to October and it was like tumbleweed. And I'm just about kind of crawling out the other side of that now, but nowhere near where I thought I can try not to should myself here, but where I thought I would be at this moment in time, although things are slowly turning again.
Is your business seasonal?
Historically, like when I was more focused on sort of B2C, then yeah, this time of year would be busy. Like people want Christmas presents. That's it. I'm not noticing that so much. No, the housing market is an interesting place at the moment. I have had success with any of the big agents to even engage in a conversation with me. But there's a huge movement going on in the estate agency at the moment with independent or freelance agents. And they're the ones that get it. What I'd like to do is try and tap into one or two of those networks of those, the likes of EXP or TA. I haven't managed to break into a kind of big one. It's just been individual agents so far.
How do you do that?
I've not found the answer to that one yet. I've got lots of social proof. Most of my work up until probably a month ago was almost exclusively across Instagram. All of the kind of the good stuff happens in the DMs in Instagram, really. I've been able to follow and connect with many, many, many sort of independent agents over the course of the last sort of 12 months or so. So I will message them there. I have a kind of four-step process, I suppose.
Okay.
I DM them on Instagram. I can see whether or not they've read it or not. If they've read it and they respond, that's brilliant, but that doesn't really happen. That maybe happens like 1 in 10 in the first message. Then I'll send them another message a week or so later. If that one doesn't land, I will switch up my approach a couple of weeks after that, and I will send them a direct link to a piece of content that I've done with another agent who I think is similar to them, and say, oh, hey, have a look at this reel, or have a look at this portrait I did for this agent, thought you might like it, gives you a little bit of an insight into what I do. I've been switching to trying to find them on LinkedIn, which was a platform I avoided. It's just, you know, constant kind of motivational speech and bigging up of one another, and I don't, that's not my vibe at all. That being said, a lot of agents hang out there. It is a space they spend time. And actually, having gone back there for the first time in sort of 2 or 3 years, it's not quite as bad as it used to be.
When you're reaching out to these agents, your step process presumably is looking for that lead them as a client. Yeah. What would happen if you're reaching out to them was more research-based in terms of, can I ask you a question? Know them, where they hang out.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, that would be a different take. That's what I'm trying to do to an extent at the moment, is to just switch up the approach from time to time. This whole idea of outreach, this kind of what is sort of traditional kind of sales outreach stuff, was like really alien to me a year ago. It's not something I had to do at all. You know, in 16 years of running my recruitment business, it was all word of mouth. You know, I never had to do any real sales. It's worked with the individual agents, but breaking into those bigger pieces, the whole networks or the sort of larger high street agent types of people, I've not figured out the code for that one yet. So
there's two things here, isn't there? One, you have developed a new way of networking and lead generation and chasing. That's great, and like you say, that's working for you to a point. So what can you take from your previous experience with that word of mouth stuff? What were you really good at?
I've been much better this year at sort of keeping up to date across the socials and being present there to try and encourage people to come to me rather than me having to go out to get them. I had a somewhat scarring conversation early on in the year with the founder of one of these networks, which is still lives in my head rent free now, even though I've tried my best to coach myself out of it. But is this someone I could add real value to what they do? I messaged her, she messaged me back, she was really interested. You know, we got to setting a call in the diary. The call didn't happen. I didn't want to leave it there, obviously. I wanted to kind of make it feel as though, oh, that's cool, don't worry, you know, come back whenever you're ready, and try to sort of play it down. She had a mobile phone on her contact, so I thought, right, I'm just going to ring a number. Like that's the old fashioned way. When I first started working, I'm just going to ring her and say, I know it's a bit cheeky, but anyway, I rang her. It went terribly. She told me she more or less put the phone down on me straight away, said she felt like she was being pestered. And that was the sort of end of that, really. That was a year ago, actually. But she's in my ecosystem. She's a founder of one of these networks. Even though I'm not kind of following her directly, she's coming up in all of these other people's feeds and posts that I see. So I reached back out to her again a couple of weeks ago to sort of build bridges and, you know, just say, look, I know I maybe came on a bit too strong, or I can't remember exactly how I worded it, but I spent ages figuring out, you know, what I was going to say to her. And she's read these messages, but she's not responded to me, which is fine, but it's a long kind of, it's a long game of just sort of proving that I'm here to stay and my intentions are honourable. Is that the right phrase? But I do think there's a real tightrope you've got to walk with letting people know that you're out there and what you do and that you love what you do and you're really good at it, but you can't say it too much and too loud and too often, because that then becomes really off-putting. So, pardon?
To who?
To them. Like, it's a real, you know, when somebody comes on too strong, will you give it a rest kind of thing? Like, it's the whole idea, giving people enough space, but not too much space. And that kind of push and pull, isn't it? Hey, I'm here, I'm doing cool stuff, you might be interested. And then give them the space to come to you. But if they don't, or they go, or they get distracted by something else, it's just a little, you know, tap on the shoulder. Oh, by the way, I'm still here. But don't keep on doing that, because, you know, eventually they'll go, will you please stop tapping me on the shoulder? I know you're there. Just leave me alone.
Folk are quite good, aren't they, at unsubscribing from stuff and muting and unfollowing.
I think I've got it in my head that she thinks I'm this awful human being. She probably doesn't even give me a second thought. She's living rent free in my head, and I'm building this picture of what she thinks of me. I know rationally and on an intellectual level, I know it's complete nonsense. It's all fabrication.
How do you rewrite that narrative in your head? Because the story that you're telling me is the narrative that you're telling yourself.
Yeah. The attempt last week or the week before is to try and press that reset button on this and rewrite the narrative. And I've worked with two of her really, really high flying agents. I did a really quick work with them. And I was like, right, I'm going to show her this. And she knows I work with these two guys under her umbrella, and they like and trust me and all of that stuff. Then that's a big flag that says, actually, this guy must be all right. He's not that.
You want this person to appreciate you, and you're not comfortable with leaving it with the idea that they don't like your work and your approach.
It's not about the work. It's about me, I think.
Me.
It feels like, I feel like she could be a real door opener. I think if I could get her on board, it would change the face of my business almost overnight, because they've 200 or 300 agents. I'm working with probably about half a dozen of them already. Good work with people in her circle.
What makes this individual the most important individual in this network?
She's the founder. So in my head, if she goes to their, you know, their board meeting or whatever and says, look, I've got this guy, Darren, he's done work with these agents under our umbrella already. You know, he's doing really good stuff. They love what he does. Let's offer this out to our network. Let's get him to... My dream, I think, not my dream, I don't know whether I would do it really nervously, but they have an annual conference once a year. Let's get Darren to the annual conference, give him a little stand there, show him all the portraits he's done for our agents in our network already. Then all of a sudden I've got this huge opportunity in front of us.
Darren, so this conference, does this conference happen every year?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know for definite, but I could do some more digging. But this is the kind of idea that's twirling around in my head.
Okay.
This sounds more productive.
Chasing the conference rather than the person probably sounds more productive
at this point in time. Well, I guess she's like in my head, I've made her the gatekeeper to that. That may or may not be true, I suppose.
I mean, you know, there's a whole world of psychology can explain why two people do or do not hit it off. You don't know what day that person was having when your phone call came. And it was really interesting. She's using words like, I was a bit cheeky. And I'm thinking, well, dude, because you'd agreed to have a meeting. You were just following up. So the narrative to me is, you reached out to somebody, you agreed to have a conversation, that conversation didn't happen, you reached back out to say, can we have the conversation? They went, oh, I wasn't expecting it this way. And that's not about you, that's about them and where they were. So I think that retelling of the narrative is quite important for your goal journey, because if that's sitting rent-free in your head, that is going to potentially hold you back from getting into this network, because that, as you said, you've made this person into a gatekeeper. So I think just, you know, closing that story off, making a new narrative of, I reached out to somebody, wasn't the right time for her, doesn't mean that I'm not right for that network, doesn't mean that I'm not right to be at their conference, doesn't mean that I haven't got a space there. And actually, I've got social proof because I've worked with agents in that network.
Yeah.
Your goal has the two parts. You've got the goal of growing, and the goal of growing is increasing that B2B. And one of the ways to increase the B2B is you want to get into this network. So we're getting really specific on this goal now. So a very specific goal to get into the network.
Yeah, it feels like a long way off, but it could just be one conversation, couldn't it? So
could be, or it could be many conversations.
Yeah.
How would you feel if you, I don't know, in the new year, you have a conversation with somebody about this, not the person you've already spoken to, and it feels like another closed door? How would that feel?
Yeah, it would. I think it would probably, I can tell what I would say in my own head now. It'd be, yeah, I told you, that wasn't going to work.
Can we give you permission to tell yourself that you can fail 10 times with something?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I get back to what I thought. I can do all this in my own head. I can rationalize. I can, on an intellectual level, I understand all of this stuff. Maybe it's the saying it out loud, I suppose. It's verbalizing these things. Maybe I need to do a bit more of that, I guess. I need to work on how I turn that intellectual knowledge into actual thoughts and feelings. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm really excited to follow your journey, because I think talking it through is possibly the thing that you need. You've got a really solid idea about where you are, where you want to go. You're very certain and determined about certain aspects of this. You know, growing is the priority, not the expansion. You've got an idea of who you might work with. You know, you've niched, or you are niche specific industry. And so you're right at this point of, you know what it is that you want to do next. This goal is so real and visual to me.
I think that's the biggest achievement of the year so far, really.
Yeah, well done.
I think on January 1st, I knew that, like, I was drawing nice houses and people liked them. But I didn't really, I don't think I knew with any certainty who my audience was, or what I wanted to do with it, where I wanted to go. I just wanted to do as many of them as I could. And I would just sort of throw it all out there and, you know, hope something bit. I think that is the big success story of this year so far. I haven't made a fortune, and it's not, I come back to that because it is about that to an extent. I don't want to make, well, I want to make as much money as I can do, but it's not about that. I want to get a foundation in place so I don't feel like I'm chasing my tail all the time. So the financial thing, I try and say I'm ignoring it, but I'm not. I can't get away from measuring my success by what my bank balance looks like, and it doesn't look. I'm in a really fortunate position. My wife is she's the breadwinner of the house. She looks after us all. You know, I do a lot of the sort of picking up of the pieces of the childcare and all of that type of stuff. So there's all this kind of, I mean, we can get really into the weeds here with the patriarchy and all of that kind of stuff. That is a big part of the sort of self-talk at the moment is step up, get your act together, start providing. Yeah, I mean, even saying it out loud, I think it's an interesting one. And again,
my podcasts generally talk about that women's view and that women's lived experience, and so I'm so excited to have men on the podcast.
Is it like the other way around, I suppose?
Yeah, of course it is. you know, being feminist and noticing feminist practice doesn't mean that men have it easy at all. And we know that, you know, men have a really hard time. And the very same practices and systems and structures that trip women up.
If we're going to go into all of that, what goes on in my head is it's like, well, I can do all of that. I can beat myself up about that and get all kind of riled up. But then you're like, well, look at you. You're a white middle-aged bloke with all of, you know, so privileged, so much, you know, so much going for me that I don't have to kind of work for. So many privileges granted to me. What the hell are you whinging about? So I'm not whinging about that, really. But, well, yes, I am. Clearly I am.
I think what you're saying is what's important to you. And what's important to you is to be profitable. And
what's grow. Important is proving to myself and, mm-hmm. Proving to myself first, but proving to the outside world that what I'm doing here actually is working. It really, it's legitimate and it's not a plaything. I'm not a hobbyist here. I've got a business and it works. That's the big thing. I'm not, you know, little Darren just drawing houses in his back garden. I am, totally am that, but, you know, it's a real proper business.
You are that and you are doing the other stuff, which is the real value that's bringing to your B2B customers. And proving that your work is legitimate, you know, part of that goal that we're exploring is, you know, how do you get yourself into that network in that place where legitimacy is then that feels like it's a marker for you of legitimacy in some sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
With most goals, we talk about time scales, actions. You're already on the path on the sales stuff and your leads and your CRM. So you've started some of this goal already. Do you want to start properly now or in January?
Well, we're in it now, aren't we? So I've never been one that's really ever subscribed to New Year's resolutions, if I'm honest.
If I say we would catch up in 4 weeks and it'll be via email rather than a recorded conversation, but if I say, right, these were the three things that you were looking at and focused on for your goal in 4 weeks' time, what three things are coming to mind as goal actions as a result of this conversation for you?
Okay. Well, I guess, first of all, establish whether or not this conference that I've conjured up in my mind actually. So I know that there's another network of agents, EXP, that you might have heard of. They definitely have a conference because I've seen it happened in Miami last week, I think.
Oh.
So they're a big global network of agents. Can I find out when it is and where it is? And then I can build a plan towards that. That feels like something that's doable.
Yeah. Anything else?
I'd like to get one new client on board, somebody I've never worked with before. I've got a few that are kind of in the mix that they've been sort of dangling. That would be a good goal. I've also got, two of my clients at the moment who have come. I made a switch back in sort of June. Or I sort of tried to create a new offer, and it was bundle packages,
mm-hmm.
to try and iron out the peaks and troughs. So buy, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 portraits off me in a package, you get 12 months to use them.
All right.
I would like to get one of them to buy another one. I think that's a good achievable goal. And a third one, I don't know. Have you got any ideas on what a good third one would be off the back of our conversation?
My reflection on this is that, you know, a lot of this is on your shoulders, is I've got to do this, I'm doing this on my own. And, you know, a lot of founders and business owners are exactly the same. And I wonder, I know that you're not there yet in terms of collaboration and you want to grow first, but I'm reaching out to a similar type of artist with an aesthetic to even have an exploratory conversation might be a way of build a community, or at least starting that in your goal. You don't have to sign anybody up, you don't have to work with them, you don't have to share work.
Probably over the last 2 or 3 months I've been just kind of bookmarking posts and from different artists that have popped up in my feed and thinking, like, I've got something to refer back to when I'm ready. So I'm trying to do a little bit of groundwork as far as that type of thing is concerned. Yeah, but maybe I could try and speak to one of those. That might be an action, I suppose, is already and see if there's someone there that kind of stands out and might be worth dropping a message to.
So when I email you in 4 weeks' time, I'll be saying, Darren, we had a great conversation. You're fascinating, really excited about where you're already going. But what did you find out about the conference? How did your current sales pipeline unfold? Anything interesting there? And who have you reached out to as a fellow artist? Does that sound?
That sounds good, yeah.
It has been fascinating talking to you. Your experience in business definitely shows in terms of how you've approached this. It's a lot that I think listeners will take from this, how focused you are. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. I think I was conscious that I didn't want to be so self-aware as it getting recorded, and because it will be so cringy to listen back to, but I definitely switched off that that in my head. So yeah, it all came out. So thank you. You asked really interesting questions, and I'm interested to listen to a few more of the podcasts as well and see what other people came up with. It'll be fascinating to see where it goes.
I want to pair you up with maybe one or two of my other guests. So what I'll do is I'll get you to listen to their episodes, and then you'll come together and we'll have a group discussion. And I was hoping that between you, you could give each other support on your goals.
Yeah, to peer support group.
Thank you for being so open with me. And I know I asked lots of questions.
It was really good. It was a really, really cool conversation.
Before we close today, a quick heads up about what's coming next. We've now met three of our 2026 goal setters, Rebecca, Jen and Darren. And if you've been listening closely, you'll have heard three completely different goals. In the next episode, I'll be bringing those stories together, the similarities and the differences, to look at the psychology of goals from a bigger lens. What drives us, what holds us back, and what happens when we start to see our goals from an identity perspective. So if you've been thinking about your own 2026 goal, you'll want to join me for the next episode. We'll also get a quick intro to the next three goal setters, Duncan, Lucy and Bavany. That's all for today. Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. And remember, you can help me to reach my goal to double the weekly podcast listeners by just sharing this episode with two friends or contacts. You can ask them the curious question, what's your 2026 goal?